Commander is great because it is flexible. You can find tables for pre-cons and pet decks, combos and competitions, ladies facing left and even bears and cars. Even with all this variety, I see a lot of folks talking about having bad experiences because they got into a bad pod. Sometimes the decks were more efficient, sometimes the playstyles didn't match. Other times it was as innocuous as running a card that someone detests and they reacted poorly. In each case, there was something missing. Namely, meta crafting. Something that folks might think belongs solely in competitive formats, but today we're going to make the case that it's helpful at every table. I'm Alex, I'm today's Spike on the mic. We're going to do something a little bit different. I'm going to share with you my thoughts up front, and then, a little bit later on, we're going to bring Jim on to have an unscripted discussion about the topic. Our hope is that by applying some of the skills and frameworks we're going to talk to you about, you'll find yourself on the roadmap to better casual games. When we look at setting up a pod, each player is essentially bringing four things to the table. Their personality, their pacing, their peeves, and their passions. Now, I'll be the first to say that not everyone's personality is enjoyable to everyone else. Simply put, there are certain people I don't want to play with, certain people I do. I think most folks would agree with that. That leaves us with three different axes on which to craft our games. The first is going to be pacing, which includes a lot, but generally revolves around how much focus you're committing to the game itself and how fast the game is going to be going. You want to be able to talk about how long in terms of time it's going to take, along with how many turns you expect your deck will need to win. In other words, how fast are you going to go? Next is peeves, which I think can be summed up as what we consider unfair. Some folks, they just don't think stacks is fair. Some folks think dual lands aren't fair. If you aren't going to enjoy playing against something to the point that you're going to complain about it, bring it up ahead of time. Last is your passions. What kinds of game actions are going to make you remember this pod? Is it getting a janky setup to pump out a bunch of tokens? Is it winning a stack standoff where you've set yourself up with a lot of interaction? For some, it's simply the good times and the jokes we tell at the table. These three elements can give us some fairly deep insight into people around us, allowing us to better craft the type of game we're about to play, along with some of its goals, letting us pick the right decks for the right people. I'd like to bring Jim in at this point to discuss this idea just a little bit more, flesh out some of these ideas, and hopefully end on some real ways you can improve your pods. Hi, Jim. How's it going?
Hey, I'm doing great, Alex. How are you doing?
Living the dream. So you and I have talked a little bit about this idea of the four P's of preparing a pod, for lack of a better term.
I like that.
Yeah. So that's personality, pacing, peeves, and passions. Now, You and I have talked about those a little bit. Do you like this framework? Have you seen it work for yourself?
I do. The one solid takeaway I've gotten from it is that if you run into any problems, just change your personality and then you got problems. But
yeah, right.
No, but real talk, like that's the one obviously that you can change it a little bit. But I think that one of the most important parts is that it's important to acknowledge that you just don't get along with everybody,
Right.
You don't have to try to get along with everybody. It's obviously good to be amicable with people, but
for sure,
you don't have to be best friends with everybody.
And I think that's the core of it, is it's about opening yourself up to as many experiences as you are willing to without making yourself feel pain. I think in a lot of ways is what the whole model is about. And frankly, part of it is there's just people that don't get along, and that's okay. Yep. There's all sorts of people that play Commander, and there's only going to be more throughout these next couple of years between Universes Beyond, some of the other crossover products. We're going to see a lot of people join the hobby.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of people have, even in the past year, they're looking for stuff to do. They might be stuck with their roommates and looking for a new hobby, to play while they're killing time I think we've already seen a lot of growth in the past year. Like even the past 3 years have been a huge moment for Commander in the history of Magic.
Yeah, I really think one of the things that pushed me to make this is I've seen a lot more misunderstandings, even amongst, purely casual folks who don't even, look at or pay any attention to the top end of competitive play about what
casual is at right now. There's some out there that are telling us that power creep's out of control. There's no way to even have a fun game. Mm-hmm. There's folks out there that are having trouble like finding the right game for their, you know, ladies facing left tribal. And in the middle of it is a whole bunch of new folks who are showing up with everything from, you know, super hyper death decks to, you know, precons with cards taken out to make them worse. So
yeah, I think it's incredibly timely too, because like right now, as we speak, there's like LGSs around North America, at least. I'm not sure how it is in the rest of the world, but they're starting to open up for, you know, more organized play, for more FNM, for more, you know, here in Winnipeg, it's Wednesday night commander or Monday night commander, depending on which shop you go to. And so I think it's really timely to be talking about, you know, especially when we're talking to strangers, you know, what are the central pieces that need to be in place for you to enjoy that commander night?
Yeah. And I think, at least from my own perspective and having tried it out a few times, just going to the various stream games I've been going to, this framework really does a good job of communicating exactly the type of player you are, along with the type of game you're looking for.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So let's dive into it.
Yeah, for sure. Now, obviously, we just talked about personality. I mean, when was the time you changed your personality, Jim, consciously? Well,
I do it like once a week. I like to keep people on their toes.
Yeah, yeah. Having you show up in that full clown suit the other day was definitely weird.
Yeah, you know, people tend to view me, I guess, on Twitter as a little bit of a wholesome community member, but the Spike Feeders know better than that.
Let me tell you.
So I like to drop an F-bomb every once in a while and, you know, shake things up.
Yeah, I personally was shocked. Like, I knew Jim before the fame, and then I see him get on camera, and all of a sudden he's a, you know, goody-two-shoes Boy Scout. Wait, do y'all have Boy Scouts up here?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Sorry, I didn't know one way or the other. Anyway, so obviously personality, I think, is just something you have to learn to deal with. It's important to be cognizant of what your personality is, though. Like, if you're the type of person who gets really salty really easily, I think that's something you should tell the table, right? Similarly, if you're the type of person who gets offended really easily, you know, like by cards or plays made against you, that's something you should tell the table so they can, you know, try to work around how you are being or how, you know, things that are going to set you off. Yeah. On the other hand, if you're the type of person who's recognized that about yourself and is trying to work on it, maybe that's something you can, you know, look at internally and be like, okay, maybe I shouldn't get mad because they blew up my Scrawdon Hawk, you know?
Yeah, or like, and we've talked about this in other games that we've had too. Like, you know, we played a lot of Among Us and a lot of Jackbox. Mm-hmm. And especially in Among Us, there's one, you know, there's usually a point in a gaming night where everybody's kind of tired and you're trying to make that decision about whether to play one more game or not. And sometimes playing the next game when everybody's tired is not necessarily the best idea. Because even though you might have time to start another game, it's just not as good. And we see that on filming days too, where we're like five or 6 or 8 hours into filming the last game. Like, people are just not on. They're making mistakes. They're getting more frustrated more easily. They're taking more time in the tank. You know, they might just have a little bit of a shorter fuse. It's just like, you know, it's important to know and recognize in yourself when it might be time to call it for the night. So, you know, like you mentioned, that little bit of introspection can be really important.
For sure. And so let's jump into the actual things that I think you can talk about and maybe adjust in and of yourself. And the first one, and I think is the most expansive, is the pacing of the game that you're about to play. That's everything from the temporal time it's going to take to the number of turns to how efficient you're going to be. And it's even including some things like, you know, I prefer in this game that we should be taking about the first 3 turns off so we can be playing most of our magic in the, you know, 6 to 7 CMC range, right? That's going to be a completely different game than EDH, or a CEDH game, that might go just as long in terms of total time spent, but you're probably only going to make it to turn 5 or 6.
Yeah, you know, that's sort of like the no rush 20, you know, in terms of StarCraft terms, you know, of the Magic world, is like, you know, the first 3 turns are going to be set up terms where we're casting our ramp and we're, you know, just drawing cards and making land drops and stuff like that. You know, it's a valid playstyle. It's not necessarily one that I totally jive with, but if that's what somebody's expecting, it's definitely important to get that out there so that, you know, if I'm thinking, well, I'm going to be doing a lot of stuff in the first 3 turns, maybe I want to pull out a different deck, or maybe, you know, if it's the Wednesday night commander and there's 30 people there, maybe I want to say, well, maybe this is not going to be a good match because I only brought 2 decks and they're both more powerful than that or something like that, you know?
Right. And I think in a lot of those cases that, especially if there's external time pressures, like, for example, at one of our local shops, it's 90-minute rounds for casual night commander. And so you can't be playing things like super lock stacks that don't have, you know, some way to come over the top, right?
Yep. Because I'll tell you one thing is so frustrating is when you're playing in timed rounds, when somebody like extends the game really long without a really clear direction of how to end things off and the game just ends in a draw. It's so unsatisfying. And then you're just like, okay, well, I guess we'll all pick up our decks and go and get repaired into different pods and, you know,
hopefully have a game this time.
Yeah, yeah. That was a great use of an hour and a half, and there was no no real outcome to that game, you know?
Well, and I think what this does is it sort of sets the tone for this whole system in that, first off, in my opinion, the length of the game, both temporally and by number of turns, is a better indicator of power than people's indicators of power.
Yeah.
Like, people are usually way better at telling you what turn their deck's going to win than they are at telling you how powerful their deck is.
Yeah. Yeah. I would say so as well. You know, like Sheldon talks about this quite a bit, but, you know, in his concept of this idea, he'll say all bets are off after turn 10. Like, literally anything you do after turn 10, you know, you can't fault somebody for it because the game's got to end, you know? Mm-hmm. And everybody draws that line a little bit differently. You know, for me, it's probably closer to turn 7, turn 8, where I'm just like, if anything happens after that, then, you know, the game's going to end, you know?
Yeah.
For like CEDH, that line is obviously a lot lower. Like, we're talking
basically turn 2.
Like, with the ad nauseum decks that are out there right now, it's turn 2. It's like all bets are off after turn 2. You got to be on the lookout for somebody trying to end the game. But yeah, that's the kind of point where, like, when you're trying to mesh two people in a pod, if one person is expecting all bets are off after turn 2 and the other ones are expecting all bets are off after turn 10, you've got a mismatch there.
Yeah. And it's a really easy way for folks to say, okay, obviously we're not jiving here. Where can we meet in the middle?
Yeah.
And I also think it cuts down on something that I see a lot, especially from casual folks who might have higher power casual decks that aren't CEDH by any means, but are still very efficient and focused. And that's that every single deck seems to be a 7, no matter if it's ladies facing left or, you know, hyper competitive Quain or, you know, whatever the case might be. There's a huge gulf between what is CEDH and things that aren't CEDH but are still really good and, you know, pre-con decks, right?
Yeah. You know, there's like a weird asymmetry of perception with CEDH and like the rest of Commander in that. Like, when CEDH players are sitting around and they're saying, and, you know, somebody might say, oh, that's a casual deck. Like, somebody made this comment on one of our recent videos about the Inala Wanderwine Prophets combo.
Because we didn't do Spellseeker.
Yeah. And they said, you know, this Wanderwine combo is fine for casual decks, but it's not a CEDH combo. And I'm like, well, first of all, we didn't, like, purport it to be a CEDH combo. But, you know, it's... when you've got CEDH players talking about that sort of thing and they say, oh, that's a casual deck, usually they're saying this is not appropriate to play at a CEDH table or, you know, this would be out of place if you pulled it out at a CEDH table. So they kind of define casual as being not competitive. But on the flip side, when you've got a bunch of players that are used to lower power games, they'll say, oh, that's, you know, not casual, or they'll say that's CEDH. Really what they're saying is this is not appropriate at a casual table. So, you know, they're kind of, it's less like a gradient and more like a, would this be appropriate to play at my table? Kind of determination.
I actually think that leads me really well into the next piece that we need to talk about, which is the peeves, the second part. Mm-hmm. And part of that is I asked a couple weeks back on Twitter, what's something that either you yourself or someone else has asked you in your presence not to be included in a Commander game? Right. And I got 50 some odd comments. And while there was some consistency between the answers, by and large, what they came up with was basically anything you could do in the game besides attack with a creature. And even some of those, you know, weren't kosher. You know, I've seen no silver bordered cards, no persistent petitioners, rolling to attack, Walking Dead Secret Lair, stacks, king making, spike plays, infinite combos came up quite a bit. I think my favorite one was board wipes. And I can't imagine even a casual game without having board wipes in it.
Well, I think that really goes to show like how broad and diverse the format really is, right? Like, not only can you see just about anything under the magic sun in tons of metas all around the world, tons of playgroups all around the world, you've also got people's preferences that are all across the board, right?
Exactly. And I think part of why I wanted to frame this way is casual has to deal with this problem far more than CEDH does. Because in a lot of ways, when we're talking about this model, pacing, peeves, and passions, CEDH basically is just focused on passions, right?
Yeah.
That's all you really need to bring to the table. discuss what you're trying to do, why you're playing this particular game, because everyone's already agreed. You can blow me up. You can lock me out. You can make me have a real bad time. Don't worry. I'm loaded for bear.
Yeah. Yep. And so like that's I've brought that up with multiple members of the CAG and the RC before, is that, you know, I think that the idea that that CEDH players don't care about the experience, the play experience of their opponents, I think that that's a misconception, because like when I'm playing CEDH, I care really deeply that the people at the table are having a good time. But the difference is, if I knew that playing like Urza, you know, stacks or whatever is going to ruin their night, it stays in the deck box, right? That's my exactly. adjustment that I make to make sure that everybody's having a good time.
Well, and I think what tends to happen is CEDH players, you know, just by dint of being a minority, we have to learn how to play at varying power levels, right? Mm-hmm. Some of us get reputations for being high power players. And so we have to go into play groups with this sort of mindset already in line, where we're trying to suss out what are the things that are going to set our, you know, pod mates off. Mm-hmm. And I really think everyone will have a better time if you take the time to do the introspection to say, okay, what are the things that are really going to make me not only have a bad time myself, but make everyone at this table have a bad time.
Yeah.
That to me is what a peeve is.
Yeah.
Is you can't sit across from it. If it's going to make you salty, verbally, emotionally, you know, whatever it is, tell something before it happens. You got to tell me at the beginning of the game, because you can't rely on this nebulous and I would argue non-existent social contract, because it's very clearly very different for everyone. And there are going to be way too many new people that are coming into the game that have never even heard of the people that have put it together. Mm-hmm. There's thousands and thousands of people that are going to be joining this game soon who have never heard of Sheldon Mennery.
Yeah.
And I mean, never, you know, read an article.
Like I said, like every once in a while, like I actually just came from RLGS this afternoon, and like nobody there recognized me. You know, I've got a seat at that table where I'm talking about that stuff, and people largely don't know who I am. And these are random people that are buying just as many cards as I am, right? And yeah, I think you've touched on something really important, and that's that, like, and this is a good, you know, this is good advice just for communicating in general, is that you can't expect your needs to be met if you don't tell people what they are, right? If you need somebody else to do something for you to be satisfied or gratified or whatever, like, if you don't tell people what that is, they can't do it for you. They might luck into doing it every once in a while, but you've got to tell them if you want it to happen with any kind of regularity.
Yeah. And basically what it boils down to for me is I want to try and take care of you as best I can because I care about you. Because frankly, if I'm going to sit down and play a game with you, I already have to like you fairly well, mm-hmm. right?
But I'm sure you can see this on camera. There's an enormous fly flying around. It's like the size of a Volkswagen Beetle. But
where?
No, it's around me.
Oh, around you. Oh, gosh. Yeah,
sure on camera. But like, okay. Ugh. Anyway, sorry. I apologize to everybody for this giant fly.
It's all good. Sorry, I thought it was on my end. I'm like, what? I haven't seen it anyway. What's going on? Invisible bee. Gosh, I lost my entire set of thought.
Yeah. Anyway, so you can't expect people to meet your needs if you don't tell them what they are.
Exactly. And one of the things that I hear a lot of higher power casual players say is they really want to have the opportunity to show off what their deck does, and they want to be able to be really engaged with the game. But the problem is there's a lot of folks at that level that build their thing they want to show off to be a game ending combo or a game ending state.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's a reasonable thing to be annoyed about when someone stops you from doing that. I mean,
yeah,
if it's truly impressive and you've had to put together 17 pieces for it and I've never seen it before, yeah, I might leave my removal in my deck just to see what you're doing one time.
Yeah.
To continually come back to a group, or even at a blind play group, to expect other people to lose for your enjoyment, I think isn't really where Commander is. And frankly, if you're the type of person who's playing a format like Commander purely for the rush of winning, I think you're in the wrong spot. Let's break it down like this. A 60 card format, competitive player, you know, experimentally says you should win 50% of the time. Top pro players, you're going to win 70% of your matches, right? Mm-hmm. That's a wildly good win percentage.
Yeah, that's like Hall of Fame level, like just over crazy, a long period of time. Yeah,
exactly.
Hall of Fame.
Exactly. Like that's Paulo Vitor Dama de Rosa, right?
Yeah.
Apply that same math to Commander. Experimentally, 25% of games. Pro level play is just over one third of your games. Are you going to be winning?
Oh,
35%.
Yeah.
Right?
Again, and then this is over a long period of time, right? If you were able to play like 1,000 Commander games in a 6-month period, you know, where, you know, that 33% win percentage would be absurdly high. Like,
oh, super high.
Again, you'd be in the top like 5, maybe top 3% in the world.
Of anybody, anywhere.
Right?
Yeah, exactly.
That kind of thing is just unsustainable over a long period of time.
Exactly. And not only that, but you're going to be, even at that rate, where you're one of the top best EDH players that's ever walked the earth, you're still losing twice as many games as you win.
For sure. Yeah, like
I should not be getting into this format to win games.
I would go so far as to say, you know, there are kind of two things you can take away from that idea. And that's, you know, when you go into a game, you should be expecting to lose, right?
Yeah.
That's the baseline, you know, where winning is a bonus on top of, you know, your baseline of losing. Mm-hmm. And the second one is that if you're winning an absurdly high amount of the time, it means that you've got a problem. And it's not a gameplay problem. It's a social problem because you're obviously not picking up on what's going on here, right?
Yeah. The meta crafting that you've engaged in hasn't given you a meta where you're being challenged or
exactly
not overcoming your opponents.
Yeah.
And so I think what that really says is that if your definition of fun is just winning, you're not going to find too many great pods because there aren't a lot of people out there that want to just lose.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So yeah, it's a, like you say, when you're playing 1v1, you know, if both people are motivated by winning and it's evenly matched competition, then both people get to trade wins, right? Like you're going to be looking at about 50%. But yeah, you should be definitely going into a Commander game expecting as a baseline to lose. You know, you can shoot to win, but just know that you're probably going to lose.
Right. Well, and sort of along this line, I know you've mentioned in the past that, especially back in the earlier days of the Spike Feeders, there was problems sometimes with like Jerry or Bill, who would build decks that really wanted to show something off, and they were sort of built around a singular idea, but it was that sort of glass cannon, this is all I do, and if you disrupt it, I'm out of this game.
Like notably, Jerry played a couple decks that kind of, you know, I call them like single point of failure decks where they've got a bottleneck, right? You've got a strategy that kind of leads to one point. And then after that point, it kind of branches back out. But if you interact at that point, that single point of failure, the rest of their endgame doesn't follow. So you've got things like Kalia the Vast. He played Ural the Miststalker, Voltron for a little while, where it's just like, okay, you know, Jerry plays Kalia. If I counter it, then, you know, counter it again and counter it again. He's literally just out of the game, right? Can't do anything because he's going to be like ramping to 8 to drop demons or whatever, right? But the problem was, if I didn't counter Kalia, like I was playing an Izzet deck at the time, if I didn't counter Kalia, I had a huge problem because I'm in Izzet deck and I can't deal with 8/8 flample demons, right? Like that's the single point of interaction that I've got available to me. And it's a very binary thing, right? It's either Jerry gets to do what he does and wins, or I stop him from doing that one piece of casting Kalia and I get to do some stuff now. You know,
well, we both know Jerry's not allowed to win games. Like, so thank you for your service, first of all. But second of all, I think that's a really good way to start the conversation on what a passion might look like. And so clearly Jerry's passion with that deck was to cheat into play, you know, big 8/8 flamplers, ridiculous angels, just stuff that's going to wreck shop. Right.
Yep.
And that's a fine passion to have. I think it's very, in a lot of ways, very Timmy. You don't want to see your gigantic creature go in and wreck shop. That being said, you have to couch it and phrase it, and in a certain way, build your deck to allow it to happen in increments, right?
Yeah, so that it's not strictly binary, right? You can have some varying degrees of that happening throughout the game, and that might mean, you know, that might mean pulling back a little on the giant creatures that you want to cheat into play, so that if Kalia gets dealt with, you can cast your 5-drops, right? Instead of just being like 9-drop tribal and just being taken totally out of the game by a turn 3 counterspell, right?
Right. Because then you can actually have some of what you're looking to do in a game without feeling like because someone defended their own board state that you were getting beat up on.
Yeah. Or, I mean, the alternative is like diversify what you enjoy in a game. Like think about what you like in the game. And maybe that's not the only thing that you want to get done out of that game. Like I've got a ton of decks where they've got all sorts of goofy, random crap that, you know, I can end up pulling off in a game where I'll sit there saying, yes, that was worthwhile. It was a good use of my time because I accomplished something cool with my deck, even though it wasn't winning. Right. So I think your options are, you know, and I say this fairly frequently too, like if your definition of fun is really narrow, then you're going to have fewer games and fewer people that you can play against where you're going to have a good time, right?
Yeah.
So if you recognize that about yourself, start thinking about other things that make you happy about playing Magic, right? Like, you know, maybe it's casting a particular spell. Maybe it's like, I don't know, equipping Krark with his thumbs using Bludgeon Brawl or something like that, right? Like just random stuff, right?
That'd be great, actually.
Yeah, like, just random stuff like that, right? Where you're just like, I want to do something goofy and fun. It has nothing to do with winning, but I just want to do it, you know?
Right.
And Commander is for sure the format for that. It's maybe not what everybody wants to be doing. But when you broaden your definition of fun like that, you'll find you'll have more opportunities to have fun within the games that you play.
Well, absolutely. And it really helps contribute to the meta crafting discussion that you're having, you know, at your table. It is especially effective in your in-house groups, right? Because you can come back after, you know, more than just one game night.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, it's not something that I think people at an LGS are going to go too in-depth and be like, oh, yeah, I'm just going to totally sit this game out so you can assemble your combo piece. But they might not counter something that's really important to you if it's not going to completely end their game state.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And, you know, there's kind of a tough thing, too, because there's always this really weird tension between sharing what your deck does. Right. So let's say you're really excited. Like I've got a Flash Hulk deck. Right. And I cast Flash. I bring in Protean Hulk. But it's not a Cephalid Breakfast combo. It brings in all of the zero drop creatures in the game. And then I'll grab like some other whatever to grab with the 6 CMC allowance. Right.
Okay.
So when I took this to the rules committee, I was playing on their stream. They invited me on. I'm like, hey, I want to play my Flash Hulk deck. And Flash is obviously banned for the folks at home, just in case you know or don't know that. And I think it was Toby was like, eh. And I'm like, I'm doing something cool with it, but I don't want to tell you what it is. I want it to be a surprise because I think that this is going to be more fun if you see it as a surprise than if you know it's coming, right?
Right.
And there's always a really weird tension between, you know, telling somebody what your deck does and them having enough information to adequately shut it down. And the flip side of keeping it a secret, right? Because I think I've played against people in random settings where, you know, they don't want to say what their deck does because they don't want people to like metagame against it.
And I can definitely understand that to a certain degree. I think especially when you get into the higher levels of that, I was reading a story on Twitter the other day about a younger dude down in the States playing LGS blind meta. And apparently he just didn't want to tell the rest of the table what he was playing until they'd all settled on their commanders.
Yeah.
Like he wouldn't reveal it. And it turned out to be a turn 3 Dino Blood combo. And it's like, come on, man. Why?
Yeah.
Why would you act this way?
Yep.
And so to me, it's better to overshare and risk not getting to do what you're going to do because you only get to do the surprise once.
Yeah.
Right. And either it could be a pleasant surprise because you asked permission and went after it. Like Jim, you said, right. Mm-hmm. With the, hey, trust me on this. I know it's not technically legal and I know it's a powerful card, but trust me, it's going to be fun. Not I'm going to kill you all.
Yeah.
Versus, oh no, you can't know my secret combo, Yugi.
Yeah, exactly, right?
Don't do that.
Yeah, and so I've even played against some people that rather than having the power level discussion at the beginning of the game, they're just like, you want to see my deck list? Like, I've seen this on Spell Table games where they're just like, I'll send you the link to my deck list and you can see exactly what I'm playing. And then I just reciprocate. And then, you know, it does rely on people being relatively familiar with a large card pool and being able to recognize the sort of hallmarks of powerful decks by looking at a deck list, which is a skill for sure. It's not one that everybody has. But it's also a good opportunity to say, like, you know, cards on the table. This is what we're playing. Not trying to conceal it or anything like that. But I think that gives people an opportunity to say, you know, this is what I'm trying to accomplish in the game. This is what I want to get out of a game of Magic. And that's, I think, what Passions really like tries to get at.
Absolutely. And I think what all of this points to is that, like I said in the beginning of the thing, there isn't inbuilt metacrafting in Commander. There's inbuilt metacrafting in competitive formats because by their nature, they're competitive. People are all trying to push it to the limit. They're trying to full throttle. And so that's part of what makes CEDH matchmaking so easy is basically the only two points of failure is if someone's kind of a jerk, right? Or, you know, the game itself goes off the rails in some way. But because we're trying to play down from there in a very imprecise way, we have to be good meta crafters. And I just don't think that's a skill that a lot of, you know, anybody picks up, let alone casual folks. And so coming into a discussion like a Rule Zero conversation with some intentionality behind it is really going to be as important, in my opinion, as the decks you end up choosing at the end of that discussion. And so for how you would do this, it just, at least in my opinion, I would sit down with someone like Jim and I'd say, hi, Jim, since we're playing in this 90-minute round, I'd really like us to try and avoid stacks things. I'd like to see this game ending somewhere between turn 6 and turn 8. My personal opinion is I like to play on the faster end of that with my Boros decks. While I don't tend to have a lot of overwhelming early game wins, I do tend to build up my board state as we go along, so I won't be taking too many turns off. Furthermore, about the only thing I'd ask you not to do is please don't get salty about stuff. I have a really hard time not taking salty comments personally. And so if there's something I'm doing to you that you don't want me to be doing or you think is palpably unfair, please try to bring it up pregame so I can, you know, try to avoid it as best I can. And as for what I really love to do, if you can shut me down really hard as I'm about to win or you can find a way to disrupt my plans, please do it. I love overcoming obstacles. And one of the main reasons I play Commander is try and compete against other people messing my game plan up.
Ooh, baby, shut me down.
Right? And so just that, I mean, what was that? Maybe 90 seconds?
If that. I don't think it was 90 seconds. But
Now you have a really good idea of what we're playing, how I'd like to play it, what I would like from you, and what I would like out of the game.
Yeah.
Right?
Like if I were to try and do something like that, I would probably say, you know, I'm looking for about the same in terms of pacing, in terms of play. I appreciate it when people like pay attention to what's going on in the game when it's not their turn. You know, this is probably like a hybrid pacing and peeves thing, but I don't like it when people like pull out their phone when it's not their turn. And then when it comes to their turn, they draw a card and they're like, oh, okay, now what's on the board? Or they try and play something and they can't do it because they weren't paying attention to the last turn of play. So that's one of my peeves. Another one of my peeves that I don't really like playing against is like pure chaos for the sake of chaos decks.
Yeah, I can understand that.
Yeah, without like a clear direction for how to end the game.
Yeah, like win conless stacks sort of thing.
Yeah, and it is a form of stacks, right? So I actually have no problem with it when it is stacks with a direction, when you're using chaos as like ways to shut other people down and create an unfamiliar environment that their decks weren't designed to function in, but with a direction. When it's just like, you know, let's see how random we can make things by casting Naked Singularity and like all sorts of weird stuff that just kind of screw up the game and add like cognitive load to playing without really a point.
Right. Because it doesn't actually progress the game state at all. It just makes the game state wacky.
Yeah. It just makes it different. Right. Yeah. So I'm not a big fan of that. In terms of passion, I've been pretty vocal about this, but I love situations where like maybe this, I love it when things come up where I'm like, maybe this has been the only time in the history of Magic this has ever happened. Like these particular cards have come together to do this particular thing.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. That's like what sustains me. Like the stories that I tell about Magic, and that's really what Passions is about. The stories that I tell about Magic are ones where something really weird happened. Like really weird. Like I want to tell a judge about this, you know?
Okay. Yeah. I get you.
Yeah. And that's me.
Okay. Well, excellent. And so obviously just because you and I played so long together, we're a fairly good match. So we don't have to move too far to make a game happen, but obviously, I just want to talk to the folks out there who might be nervous about having Rule Zero conversations because it means you might have to adjust. And I think that that's something that comes with the territory of playing Commander, especially casual Commander. If you're going to go into a blind situation where you're not pre-friends with somebody, where you haven't already talked about what you're expecting to play that night, you really need to have this type of conversation and you need to be willing to adjust your expectations. Not necessarily completely. You don't have to give away the farm and just do whatever somebody who's loud and obnoxious says. That's not the point of Rule Zero. The point of Rule Zero is to try and find the most possible fun for the people at the table. It's not about trying to get you personally to 100%. It's trying to get everyone's fun number as high as it goes,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I would also say it's a healthy dose of recognizing when that's not possible too, you know? Like if somebody wants to play something that totally is not what I'm going to have a good time playing, I would rather not play Magic than play a game of Magic that makes me miserable, you know?
I agree.
And I think that that's really important to recognize and acknowledge and appreciate. I would also say that like you know, if you're a turn, if you're an event organizer, if you are the one that's organizing a commander night, this is maybe a good spiel at the beginning of your night when you're saying, hey, this is going to be the structure of tonight's event. We're going to play two rounds. You know, they're going to be 90 minutes each. We're going to switch up pods in between. You know, if you've never played against the people that are sitting across the table from you, here's an example of what you might say to introduce your deck, right? Mm-hmm. How are you going to have a good time tonight? Let people know, you know, and yeah. it has to be, it's 10 seconds, right? It's no different than when you're introducing pre-release and you're saying, this is the, you know, this is what we're playing for the event. And if you need help, call a judge and like all of that pre-event stuff for Commander Night, it's not nothing, right? Like it's important to give your players the tools that they need to have a good time.
Well, and like I said, I think it's going to be especially important as we get back to playing in Paper Magic.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Alrighty. Well, I think that's all I wanted to talk about today. Jim, you have any other points?
No, I think this is great. I really enjoyed this. And, you know, it's given me a way to approach this discussion in a more structured way in the future. And I really like that.
Awesome. Well, I'm glad you like it, Jim. Folks out there, if you're listening to this, watching this, thank you so much for listening, first of all. Second of all, if you can go out and try this in the real world, tell us how it went. Hit us up on YouTube. Send us a mention on Twitter. That's The Spike Feeders. You can also tag me personally. I'm at Spike Feeder Alex on Twitter. I'd love to hear how this worked for you, things that you found that it did or didn't cover. And basically, just let us know how things are going. And thanks again for watching.
Hey, thank you for checking out The Spike Feeders on YouTube. If you're not subscribed yet, make sure you hit that subscribe button before you close the window. Or you can click on this link to check out our other great videos.